Do you want to know what a communication manager does and why communication is key in sports? Hi, and welcome to a new episode with SportViews Podcast. I'm Jacob Weikenstall, the host of SportViews Podcast, and today we have a new guest, and as you already understood, it is an international guest. I'm really looking forward to sitting down with Søren Højlund Carlsen, the communication manager at the Danish football club AGF. We will talk about what a communication manager does, how Søren got into the job, some advice, and also talk about how they became historic and viral with virtual stands at their games. So I'm really happy to introduce you to Søren. He has a degree in journalism. He has worked within the field ever since then. He is also an author and has written and edited some books about Danish football, like I Am Number 11, Aarhus in the Heart. He is also a true football fan with a special love and engagement for the club he works for today. Since 2017, he is not only a fan, he is also working as the communication manager for the Danish football club AGF Aarhus. Welcome to the SportViews podcast, Søren. Happy to have you here.
Thank you. And I can hear you have done your research about the books also.
Yeah, no, I mean, we have to try to put in everything about you so we get the full picture of it. So I hope I did a pretty good job with that one.
Yeah, actually, the one title that you mentioned, that is about architecture. And the other title, that's about football. So I've written books about architecture and I've written books about football.
Well, there we go. Maybe we will have a talk about it during the conversation. But, you know, as you probably already noticed, I'm really looking forward to this conversation, but also understanding a little bit more about yourself. So I wanted to just jump into how you started with the sport experience from the first time. So maybe you could start up with how you interacted with sports from the beginning.
Oh, that's a long story. It's from childhood. I started playing football when I was around, I think, 6 or 7. I remember my first football boots my mom gave me, which were a Danish brand called Hummel, and they have a Danish striker from the 70s and the 80s, Allan Simonsen, written on the side. So I was very proud about those. And I quickly fell in love with football, and I've been playing it until recently, where I'm getting too old to play, and I don't have the temperament to play with teams and with teammates who are at my own age. So from there, I fall in love with football, and I started to, of course, also watch football and follow, especially the Danish national team in the 80s. I can remember the first European, the Euros in the 84, where we played in France, almost got to the final. We played the World Cup in Mexico in 86 when I was 12 years of old. So around there, it really started getting into football. And then when I moved to Aarhus, I grew up in a small town in the north of Denmark. Then I moved to Aarhus. I quickly got engaged with the AGF, the club where I'm working now. As a young boy, as a young student, I came to our stadium with friends and and I quickly fell in love with the club. And I had all of my youth was around AGF and with my friends, where we followed the team. And of course, I also has an interest in English football. I follow a lot of different football leagues now, both as a private person, but also as a professional person. So I think it's the same story with a lot of with a lot of people, that they start playing football in a very young age, and then we just keep on loving the sport and keep on following the teams. And in my case, I've been so lucky that I also could make my passion for football my livelihood.
Well, I mean, you bring into some similar experiences that I've heard from a lot of friends that are, you know, passionate about football. But, you know, it could be very tricky to understand. But is it the game itself that, you know, that was the first interest for you, just following the ball where it was going? Or was it more the social interaction, perhaps, you know, going with friends and family?
As a kid, growing up in a small town, it was the only thing we could do after school. So it was a social thing. If you played football, you did it with your friends, and we played in a club, of course, but we also just played on our own at the local field. I grew up with a big brother who is deaf, and the thing we got in common was football. So that was also a social thing. Our dad, he isn't so much into football that he took us to see a club. I had to do my own experience when I got older to find my club to follow here in Denmark, and that was mainly a social thing, where we went to the games together with friends. We went to away games together. So it's for me, it's a lot of do with the social thing around football. Of course, I like to sit at home on a Wednesday evening and watch a Champions League game, but in these times, you really get the sense of what is about the game that you really love and like, because now you see football without spectators. Now you don't have this excitement around the games. Now you only have the pure game. You have the football, and I like to see a football game. But the thing that really turns me on and getting me engaged in football is all the thing around football, and that is also the case with my job. That I like the fan engagement things. I like the community. I feel passionate about our fans and about everything around the club and about our players. So that is the part that I'm missing right now. So I'm really missing all this thing that is around football, because right now it's only a game. And we are playing in front of almost no spectators. And when you see games from the Premier League, for instance, there are no spectators. So it's not the same right now. And that has just giving me the confirmation that the thing about football that I like the most is the people and the excitement around the games.
Yeah, and that's a good, I mean, I think that's a good question to ask you, because you bring up the social aspect of the football game, for example, and I think the Danish football, for example, Swedish football, they have a very local fan base, so to say, compared to maybe the bigger European football leagues, where you have a lot of tourists coming in. And what have been your reflection when it comes to, you know, the first few games that we're playing in Premier League, the English top division, for example, or the other games that have been played without audience in the beginning? And then how do you experience it now? Because now we have been through several games without audience.
Yeah, as everybody, I was excited when the Premier League came back and they started playing again, so we could spend the weekend watching the game. But now I have to admit, now I only watch when Newcastle play. Or because that's the team I follow, or perhaps Chelsea, which is the team my son follow. I think that is because we are lacking this excitement around the games. We were very fortunate and very lucky here in Denmark that we had a period in the summer where we could have around 8,000 people. We have a capacity of 20,000, so we were able to have almost half that capacity. And that was almost like in the old days before the COVID-19. So we had a time where football was normal in Denmark. Now we are back to square one, and we can't play in front of at least not many spectators. So that just goes to show that the thing that I like about football, or the thing I mainly like about football, is this thing that is around the games. And that is just as strong in Denmark or in Sweden. And I think it's more strong and it's more emphasized here in the Scandinavian country than you see now in the Premier League. I have been to stadiums in England. I went to see a game, Chelsea-Newcastle, with my son. And I find when I have my son, before I start working in AGF, sometimes we go to away games with AGF. That was a much bigger experience than go to Stamford Bridge. And there was a guy from Norway sitting next to me, and there was a guy from Ireland on the other side. And of course, the football is much better. It's a bigger venue. There's a much more people. But the excitement and this camaraderie and this community that there is around the game, you don't get that when you come to England. And it's ironic because we were also tourists. We came all the way from Denmark to see a game. So we were also part of this dilemma that there is over in the UK. But here in the Super League, and I know also from people I know in Sweden, it's the same thing. You can get a very, very intense, very good football experience if you go to a Hammarby game or Djurgården or whatever, Malmö. When you go to Malmö Stadium and it's full, and they sing this song before, or if you go to IFK Göteborg, and they are singing Blå och Vita before the game, that is almost as intense to go and watch Liverpool, and they are singing You'll Never Walk Alone. So again, I'm keep coming back to this thing with the spectators and the fans and the community. And the thing is that I think is very strong is the sense of almost a family feeling. We have a camaraderie. I work in the club. I'm a professional communicator. I work in the club, but I still have this bond with people from the city because we all follow this team. We all want this team to succeed. So we are one of the same. We are a family, the players, the fans, the employees in the clubs, we're all the same. We have a family. And that is unique about football. That is a very unique feeling. And I don't see that in many other part of life, that you have this common feeling and this thing that you have to get it. That is very strong.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can definitely agree. I have a big passion for football as well. So I can feel that sort of engagement that you're trying to talk about, and I think a lot of the audience as well will feel the similar feelings. I believe that a lot of people have some sort of special connection or, you know, relationship to sports in general. But you know, thinking about this whole situation that we are going through today, I'm thinking, have you started to think about, or maybe you could have some reflections about the future generation now that are growing up this year? Because there are obviously a lot of people growing up this year with a potential to become a football fan for your club, for example. Maybe you could elaborate a little bit how you are working or thinking about that perspective.
Yeah, of course, we have. We are worried about losing a generation right now because we can't get the families here. And it starts with the family. They will bring the kids here. When the kids are 5 or 6 or 7, you come the whole family. Mom and dad and maybe 2 kids. We have a concept here in AGF where we have the cheapest tickets for family in the league. So you can come here just for a family of 4, you can come to a game for 200 kroners. That's around 20 pounds. But we can't have that now. That is one thing. We don't get the families. And therefore we don't get the kids. Also, you have the young people, 15, 16, 17 years old, maybe they start to come to our to one of the stands where you are, I don't know what you say the English term is, it's the fans who are standing up, who are cheering, who are singing. You can compare it to in Germany, you have the yellow wall, that part of that sort of fans who are engaging, who are going to away game, who are singing, who are cheering, Tifosis, they call them in Italy. You don't now have a new generation because they are not allowed to come to the games. They can't be a part of this community. So it's a worry about here, how long will this crisis last? Because if we are talking about 1 year, 2 years, then I think we're going to lose a generation. And that is why a lot of the work we are doing right now is about reaching out to the city, reaching out to people, to the community, to the fans, and to new fans, to try to, even though they can't come to the game, how do we engage them? So right now we have begun to create some sort of events around our games when we play away. We have big screens, viewing of the games where people will come and see the games. Of course, COVID-19 secure and in small numbers. We're going to do a meet and greets with the players down to the city. We have a lot of small events that we do because we are worried about losing the spectators. I don't think we're going to lose our hardcore fans, the season ticket holders and the people who are coming to the games. We will not lose them, but the other part of the audience, the families, if you have a core fans and then you can imagine a circle around that and then you have another circle, I think those will be harder to get back when we will be back to normal. I hope that won't be the case, and I hope people will just come back in numbers, but I think it will be hard because somehow, even though it for you and me can be hard to imagine, some of them just forget football and go and do other things. And if you have a family these days, the competition about a family's money and time in the weekend is so hard. They have a lot of opportunity to do things as a family. They will just go on and do other things. They will not buy a season ticket and they will not come to the games. But I don't have any facts to back that up. It's just a worry that we have in the club. So we try now to do a lot of things to communicate with the fans. We also have the players calling the season ticket holders to say, how are you doing? We are missing you. We hope you come back. We have a lot of small things that we do just to try to keep the fans engaged. And so, yeah, maybe it's too hard to say that, but so we make sure that they don't forget us.
How is the player reacting to this sort of communication where they have to be involved more than ever, I guess?
Very good, very good. They also miss the fans, and they are very interesting in try to help us also with the sponsor partnership thing. Some of the players come to us and ask, what can we do? And also now that I think I can feel that the team are if not struggling, so they are working hard to try to still have this intensity in the games. Because when you play in front of an empty stadium, it's a problem if you are a player. And I know everybody's, oh, it's just about the games. They should just play the game and focus on that. And of course, that is the case. They are professional players. But I here in the Danish league, I have sometimes felt that it has been difficult to have this intensity in the games because you don't have 10,000 people. You don't have a filled away stand. We are one of the teams in Denmark. We're used to have many, many traveling fans coming with us. And that is hard to keep that intensity, put that in the game. If you don't have 2,000 people behind you at a away stand or you have a filled stadium, so you have to have that intensity somehow in another way. So that is a challenge for the player right now, that they focus on the games and try to get up to the level of intensity that they're used to when you have a filled stadium. And I think that is a challenge in every league all over Europe.
Yeah, I mean, I think those that have been following football, for example, during this month after the summer when a lot of the bigger leagues were starting over again and without fans, we saw a lot of goal scoring, maybe more than ever, especially in the first division in England, for example. And they were some were discussing this was probably because of their empty stadiums. Some, you know, it could be the losing game or the team that is, you know, having the lead. They will relax a little bit. They don't get pushed from the fans of goal scoring. It could also be the other way of it. Sometimes the ref could be involved having all the noise around it.
And yeah, we had a game last week home against FC Copenhagen, which is always a big game here in Aarhus, and FC Copenhagen they didn't have to play in this atmosphere, almost a hostile atmosphere. So, and it was a game. There were two red cards, two with one at each team. There was a lot of yellow cards. So it just got like tangled up in each other, and the players, they were arguing with each other. And I think if we had 10,000-15,000 people at the stand, I think the game maybe had tipped over, so we could get at least one point out of the game, or maybe we have won the game. But on the other hand, it's sometimes it is an advantage when you play away. We have lost away yet, even though I mentioned we have a big following when we play away. But if you play at some of these stadiums where there are traditionals or a lot of home fans and there are non-fans, then it can be an advantage if you are away team. and you are able to put this intensity into the game and put your mindset that I need to put as much into this game, thinking about the fans back home that they are watching at television, and then try to go and do as best as you can. So it's a challenge for everybody in football right now. It's a challenge for us who are working at the office. It's a challenge for the fans. And of course, it's also a challenge for the players.
Yeah, no, I can definitely understand the struggle, and it must be a big change compared to all the previous years when it comes to, you know, taking for granted that we do have fans on the stadiums and everything works as it should be, which is obviously a new thing for 2020. And with that, you know, we have already talked about some challenges now through 2020, but could you try to give us a little bit how the, you know, thoughts were going through when the rumors or the news were starting to come into, in, you know, your office? How did you handle the situation of a normal day at the office compared to now 2020 when we have the COVID-19 situation?
So are you asking about how we reacted when we got the news in the spring that we were shutting down, or do we want to know how it is to be here normally?
Well, we will come into the normal work day as well, but I was just thinking now when we have the change of, you know, before COVID and then going into COVID, how you know, as a communication manager, how do you have to work?
It's a challenge because, as I mentioned earlier, we're trying to communicate with the fans, but we can't have the end product. We can't get them to the stadium. And a lot of our work is surrounding the games. I also, a lot of what I do and my team do is also not only in the communication or the public relation part, it's also about marketing. So to market the games, to promote the games, to sell tickets, to sell more season tickets, to sell merchandise, you don't have that right now. But we still need to make sure that we are playing a part in people's lives. So how do we do that? And I was mentioning before, we have a lot of new events that we are doing. And in the spring, we had an event, I know you will come back to that later, where we had a virtual stand. We have a lot of other things. We did drive-in and so on. So right now and all through 2020 almost, it's a matter of us to try to create some sort of product or some sort of base that we can work on. And therefrom, we try to communicate and engage with the fans, but also, of course, our partners, because one of the big problems is that we can't have partners and sponsors at the game, so we can't give them the product that they have bought. So we need to be creative to make sure that they are still with us, that they still want to be partners in the club. And we have been successful with that, I'm proud to say. We haven't had any partners or any sponsors who have pulled out during the 2020. Because we have been very attentive about it. We have been very creative about it. Just to give you one example, there is a rule now here in Denmark. When you have a partner and you're going to a VIP lounge, you're not allowed to move. If you have a seat, you're sitting in the lounge doing, and because of the corona rules in Denmark, you should be staying at that seat. But the partners are used to go out to the stand to sit and watch the game. So what do you do? We created stands where you could have tables on it. So now our partners, at least some of them, are coming to the games and they are sitting outside and they are eating outside. And even though it's now quite cold here in Denmark, they've been very happy about this opportunity to be outside. So that is just one example of how we need to be creative to have the sponsors still be happy. Because if you have happy and satisfied sponsors, of course, they will be more more happy to continue the partnership with us. So it's just a matter of just trying to be creative and working hard with the solutions that we can. But it's still not the same. This year 2020 has been very different in all the other years and all the other seasons, because we don't allow to have spectators at the stadium. At the end of the day, that is the whole issue.
Yeah, so we were talking about this when it comes to the spectators and having all the fans at the stands. Well, you know, we're going to touch into in a few minutes in the conversation as well, where with the virtual stand, obviously. But let's just go back a little bit, because you've been with AGF for 3 years now.
And almost 1 year, yes.
And there's a lot of people thinking about, what does it mean being a communication manager, but also obviously how do you get the job and several other questions. So could we just go back a little bit of, you have your journalist career, and then eventually 2017 you got into AGF. Could you try to share a bit how you got into the job, basically?
Yeah, it wasn't a plan for me to be working in football or in the entertainment industry. I started out as a journalist at a newspaper, and then I worked at also television, and then I've been in some PR agency. I used to be a partner and at a PR agency, worked in that industry for some years. Then I got a little bit involved in making television again. I work at a publication here in Aarhus with books and television, and I did also PR. And I've been doing a lot of my own project. As you mentioned in the beginning, I've been writing some books. I have a secret passion about architecture, so I've been doing a lot of that on the side with books, also television, and of course football. I've been writing about the Super League, the Danish Super League. I did a biography about a player, which was the one you mentioned. So all of that coming together, and almost 10 years ago, I started doing some, not consulting, but volunteer advice. I helped the club with some, if they had a partnership event or some sort of event with fans, and they needed a guy to be on stage to talk to the fans, or they needed some guy to coordinate a sponsorship event or some sort of thing, they came to ask me if I wanted to do that just on the side, not as a job. And I got to know some of the people in the club. And then when we got, after we got relegated in 2014, I think it was, there was a new management in the club, and an entire new management in the club came in, and they brought me in a couple of years after as a communication manager. Before that, there was a press officer, but the club didn't have the resources or the capacity of having a lot of focus on that area, but they wanted to put that up on a higher level. So they brought me in. So it was almost a coincidence, just the thing I did in my life and in my career, and the passion I have for football just brought me here to that place. So if I should give advice to people, I know it sounds like a cliche, but it's do what you are passionate about, and try to make sure that you're working hard all the time, and then the opportunity will arise. And of course, now there's a lot of education opportunities. You can be in sports management or some other parts of an education that will bring you into the sporting industry. I'm just a journalist, and I've been working as a journalist. That also is a way in if you start to working with communication and public relations and so on, because you need to be able to see where are the stories, where are the angles. So it's just, and then I also encourage people to get engaged in a club on a volunteer basis if that is a possibility, and then somehow the opportunity will just keep arise someday for you, hopefully.
Yeah, and it's usually a common feeling when it comes to having the passion, as you were saying, and also just doing some stuff for example the club, or it could be another club as well. But as you were saying, it wasn't maybe the thing that you were planning from the beginning. But
I remember, I think it's almost this year we are celebrating our 140 year as a club, 140. And when we were celebrating 125, I can remember I was hired to do like a magazine for a newspaper with the club, and my friend I did it with a friend, and he texted me the other day, can you remember, this was 15 years ago, and just what's what you're doing now and what's what I'm doing now. He is a big shot in the Danish Broadcasting Association. And that was just a coincidence. But when you do something like that, you got to go on the radar, and then somehow people will remember you. And then it's just a matter of saying yes when you have the opportunity. But at the end of the day, it's just about passion, and you can't plan it. Just to give you an example from my personal life and my career, when I did a biography about this football player, Danish football player who played in AGF, it was all he was he criticized the club in this biography, and that led to that the things I was doing for the club at that time, they asked me to stop and say, now we need a break, we can't have you coming to the club anymore and help us. So I was back at the stand with the other fans for a couple of years, and then the new management came to me and said, now we would like to help you. So if that is just an example of, you can't plan anything, and so you just need to make sure that people know what you're doing, and make sure that you're doing it good also. But all these advice tends to be a lot of cliches, but even though it's true that you just need to work hard and see the opportunity and try to get your name known in the business, and then somehow you will have the opportunity. And it doesn't have to be in a communication. It can also be I have colleagues in marketing, I have colleagues in sales, I have colleagues from, also in the sporting department who are physiotherapists or doctors or whatever the field is. There's a lot of opportunity to work in the sporting department. I also have colleagues who came from handball. I have colleagues who've been working in another part of the entertainment industry, so, because there's a lot of similarities. So it's just a matter of finding your own way and remember what you're passionate about.
Yeah, and I think what you just said also helps us all understand that it's not just, you know, one job out there. There are plenty of opportunities. Yeah. And the areas, you know, is in the sports industry, they are growing into several. It's not just communication. You just brought up, you know, 7-8 other different sectors within the sports field. So that's something to just think about for everyone that is listening to this. But, you know, when you got the question, was it just like, yes, sure, I will agree to become a communication manager? Or
I had to talk to my wife and my family, because it doesn't pay so much as my former job. So that was one thing I had to discuss with my wife. And I knew it was lower pay and more hours. And obviously it was also weekend. So it took a lot of thinking about, and I talked to my wife, and we agreed that I should just go with my passion. And of course, this was and is almost like a dream job for a guy like me who is passionate about football, who is passionate about this club. And I have the trade I have the experience I have. This is what I do. And therefore, this is almost like a dream job for me. So I wasn't in doubt, but I needed to think about it. I also have kids. And of course, there's a lot of Sundays where I'm not home because I'm working. Sometimes we play at evenings. So it also put a bit of strain on your family. But all in all, yeah, as I was saying, I wasn't in doubt, and I was happy about it. And I think it came at a good time in my life. My kids wasn't so small at that time, and I was able to go into the job with the experience I had. I couldn't have done such a good job that I think I have for the last 4 years if it was 10, 15 years ago. You have to have some experience. You have to have a hard skin. And there's a lot of my colleagues in the other club. They are also about, you know, 35, 40, 45 years old. You can't come and have this job when you're just a new outside from journalist school, because then it's. I think you need some experience. You need to navigate. There's a lot of opinions about your job. There's a lot of pressure. The tone of voice in a football club, as everybody who plays football know, it can be a harsh tone. There's quick decisions. So you need to have some years under your belt before you're starting this kind of work. So it was just a good timing, I think. And I'm really happy about it right now, and it still is my dream job, and I enjoy coming to work every day. And the one advice I always give to people who ask is you need to find a job that you're passionate about, because the last thing you want to do with your life is to get dreaded in Sunday evening and don't want to go to work on Monday and then drag yourself through the week to the weekend because you don't like what you're doing. So now I have a son, he's 14 years old, and he don't know what he wants to do after school. And I say to him, the most important thing when you grow up, you need to find out what is your passion. And then you need to find a job in that line, because otherwise it would just be a dull life. We all can remember when we all have jobs that are hard, that we don't like in some times of our lives, but we need to find a job that we're passionate about. And if you have the passion about what you do, then it's not a job, then it's your passion.
Yeah, I can just sit back here and smile and just, like, you know, shake my head and say yes, 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 because for me, I'm usually talking about life balance and the example that you say, for example, Sunday waking up and you don't want to wake up. I think that's also one way people can actually, you know, think about themselves, or like, do I actually want to wake up tomorrow? And
yeah, speaking about life balance, it's also important when you have a family and you need to go away on Sunday or Monday evening. We play Monday in Sønderjylland in Haderslev, which is south of Jutland. I was away from 9 in the morning till midnight, so I didn't see my kids that day. It's important that you have the passion, and your kids and your family can see that you have this passion about your job, because then it's not a problem that you don't see them as much as if you have another job, because they can see that this is important for you. And they also will be encouraged. And sometimes AGF is a project in our family. When I am at work, my wife, she sees the games at home on television, and she texts me when we are behind, what the hell are the guys doing now? And when we're in front, she texts me hearts and other emojis. So she knows what it's all about. So that is also important that you have the encouragement of your family, because it's not just 9 to 5, it's a lot more hours. So of course it's important that you have the passion when you put in the hours, and you also need to put in the hours, because in this line of work, hard work is what you will, if you can put in the hours, you can work hard, then you will have a much more chance to succeed.
And obviously you've already talked about that there, it's not like a normal 9 to 5 day work week, but you know, I think a lot of people are asking what is, you know, happening behind the scenes, what's the communication role about? And it could obviously be different in different clubs and organizations. But what are the different things that you are doing, except, you know, staying up late some evenings and so on? What's about being a communication man? What are you doing in your role?
Yo, I'm doing a lot of, actually, so how can I explain this? Like groundwork. Production work, because I don't have such a big team. I have two guys, and then we have some students who are coming to help us. So I write a lot stuff, content. We have a lot of meetings about the projects and campaigns and what we should do. But to give you an example of a day, I will start the day home just to go through my phones in the morning, see what's in the papers. Is there something I need to be aware of? Is there something that my colleagues need to be aware of that day? Normally there isn't. I go through our social media, I go through my emails and see what is coming. And then hopefully I get the chance to bring my kids to school. And then I usually have a meeting at the beginning of the day. And then the day can be, if we have a practice with the team and we have media, I need to be present at the time so I can be of service to the media and talk to the manager, maybe talk to some of the players. And then I need to work out a plan to give you an example from today, we are bringing, we have this this new campaign where we want to do like a meet and greet, a big meeting with 500 people who will coming to watch a show on stage, where they will hear from the players, they will hear from the managers, and that's need to be planned. So we had a meeting with the event place. But today, now we're talking this afternoon, so today I can go home around 4, 5, and then I'll have the rest of the day off. And so it goes. And then at the weekend on Sunday, we have a game. So I'm going to go to this away game. Sometimes I don't go to away games. It depends. But this time I'm going to go on Sunday. And then we have a cup game on Thursday. And then we have a national break. And when we have a national break, it's a bit more quiet there. Maybe I can even get a day off and do some other things. So, but it all goes around the games. Even though we can't have spectators, my rhythm is still around the games. Because, of course, we still use a lot of energy. We make a lot of content about the games. It's still our livelihood, you can say, our bread and butter. So it's strategic. It's meetings. It's thinking about campaign. It's content. I need to do content. I write articles. I talk to the video guy. What should you do now? How should we frame this? So it's a lot of different things. And sometimes you're doing a high level strategic meeting about a very important partnership, and then one hour later you're writing an article for our website. So it can be, it's all different things.
It feels like you have to be very skilled on sorting out several tasks at the same time and understanding what's important at the moment.
Yeah, and I have been it's a matter of how you prioritize your work, and you have to be good to make lists so you don't forget anything. And then you have to be good of delegating things to other people and not doing everything your own. And in the beginning, I had a tendency to do everything myself, but you need to be comfortable of giving tasks to other people and making sure that they are doing the way we want to. And then you have to be very clear about what is that we want. And we have a very clear communication strategy, which is also our values. It's about hard work. It's about the community. It's about the city. And it's about ambition. We want to win games. So all of that goes into our communication. So if we had that grounded in your organization, then it's pretty easy just to go everyday life. But this is 2020. There's nothing normal about this. So the corona has really, it's been a big challenge, because maybe people would have the idea that there's been less work under the corona, but actually there's sometimes been more work because we have put projects out there. We have been doing other things. So it's not a normal year this year. It's in every way, it's a very, very unusual year.
Yeah. It feels like, you know.
Yeah, but
you never know.
You know, but the one when people ask, what do you do, Sean? I try to put it down in one sentence that let me see if I can say that in English. My job is to make sure that the team have the best environment to win games. And in that sentence, you can put everything into that. Because if there's a lot of spectators, that increases the chance to win the games. If the sponsors and partners are happy and there's a lot of them, more money, better players, you win the games. If there's quiet and nothing bad stories in the press and everybody is happy in the press, the team is happy and no players are doing things in the press that they are not supposed to do, everybody's happy, then there's more chance to win the games. So that's all about that. And then you have, of course, I forgot to mention, we also have a women's team, which I also help sometimes, not so much, but I also tend to that sometimes. So we also have a FIFA team. We have e-games, you know, Counter-Strike teams. They also sometimes come to me. What should we do with this challenge? Now we have this. Can you help us with something? So there's also other parts that is not just only the Danish Super League and football, as you know, it's also new things that you need to be taking care of sometimes.
Yeah, so basically your primary role is the men's team, but then obviously you have a women's team that actually started up this year, if I understood it correctly.
Yeah, and we also have our home ground. We also have a concert arena just beside it. That is also something that we do. So I also sometimes I have to be like a press officer of this arena. So if they have some problems with communication, or if they have a big event with 7,000 or 8,000 people, I need to have my phone ready if there's something's going wrong, because I am the guy who they will call and say if they, I don't know what it can be, like a bomb threat or some other things. So sometimes I also do things surrounding concerts. And last summer before Corona, we had Volbeat and Phil Collins at our home ground. I also need to be at my job at that time. I don't have anything to do with it, but because it is as our home ground, I need to be ready with my phone.
Yeah, it seems like there's tons of stuff that you need to be ready for, even though you have a specific focus on one role.
Yeah, and of course I get to see a lot of football games. That is one of the perks.
Yeah, that must be, I guess, one of the best ones. But the
only when we are ahead. Only when we are ahead. One of the things that I don't like is to go with the team and we are losing, and I have to clean that up afterwards. I don't like that.
Maybe you should hire an assistant taking over those.
Yeah, sometimes sort of I would like the assistant to go at the cold away games, playing some small team, and we will lose. Sometimes we have lost in the cup, for instance, and other places where we weren't supposed to lose. And when a big club like us, we lose those kind of games, you almost have an instant crisis. It's like you are a big business who have done something wrong, and the PR boss at that company have to go into crisis management. I need to do that every time we lose a game. Almost every time we lose a game, because the pressure is so high from the media, from the fans, because we are a big club and there's a lot of spotlight on us. So when you lose a game, it's almost like you need to go into crisis management. And then when you win a game, it's a matter of keeping people on the ground and make sure we have this positivity to go further to the next game so we can get more spectators.
And then I guess, you know, the last season was a really good one in that case, because if I haven't said everything right, you did one of the best seasons for a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
So that must have been a good year in that case when it comes to...
We ended up third, which here in Denmark is a big thing, because you get medals and we like medals here in Denmark. And it was our best result in 23 years. We end up playing in Europe, which was where we unfortunately went out after round two. So my job in the spring was just to, it was Corona, so it was difficult because there was one part where we didn't have spectators, and then we were allowed to have more spectators. So we went into like this promotion mode also, because we needed to sell tickets. But we also need just to make sure that we stayed on firm ground and one game at the time. And the thing that the people I work a lot with, the media, they think it's a cliche when you say, oh, we're going to take one step at a time or one game at a time. Let's not get carried away. It's only one win. And when you hear football players say that in television, or you read about that, or you hear managers say that, I'm just one game at a time. Now we're going to go through the next game. It sounds like a cliche. And we also, we get a lot of criticism about this because it's cliche, but it's, even though it's the truth, and it's just, so for me, it was a matter of making sure that we won't carry it away, so the players didn't start up thinking about, oh, we can maybe get the championship and so on. So just a matter of after every game that we won, now we are at the next game. So think about the next game when you talk to the journalist, make sure you have your feet on the ground, and then we go to the next game. So, but it was a very exciting time. And of course, it's a lot more fun when we win games than we lose games.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's always more fun to share the good memories. But speaking of that, and you know, the whole season, I think this is also a good time to jump into the other historic part of the last season when it comes to the virtual stands. Could you just share the whole story of it? I mean, obviously it's a big one, but try to, you know, condense it a bit and understand how a Danish football club can happen to have basically a lot of people from around the world taking part in a game that is taking place in Denmark, and how we are talking about virtual stands.
Yeah, it came about because we were, a lot of my colleagues and myself, we were working from home, and we were talking like you and I do now via Zoom. And we had this challenge about the first game. We were so lucky that we will have the first game because it was postponed, and it was a derby. So it was postponed from before Corona. So we knew we're going to play the first game in Denmark and perhaps in Europe, perhaps even though in the world, we're going to play the first competitive football game after Corona, or during Corona, but when football opens up again. So can we do something special? Can we engage the fans somehow? And then in Denmark, we had a television show on the national television in the weekends, where the audience and people were back home were singing via Facebook and Zoom, and they were joining in with this common song, and they were singing along with well-known artists. So that gave us also the idea, could we take that and then scale it up and then have a lot of people watching a game together and being together? And then, as I was mentioning, we were used to doing Zooms and Teams and all that stuff. So the technology was in front of us. Now it just was a matter of us to scale it up. We talked to the guys from Zoom. They were very excited about the idea, and they said it can be done. In theory, you can have all the people that you want. And then it was just a matter of developing the idea with a big screen. How can we have all those people coming up to the big screen? How should the technology work? What do we do with moderators? And so on and so on. And in the end, we had this project which just almost, it blew up in our lab, because there was so much interest about it. People were so excited about this. And the idea just got better and better. We had this screen that was not just a big screen, but it was a long screen and not so high, so we could have it alongside the pitch. So we almost created like an artificial stand where people could be seen and the players could see that. And it worked out so good. I must admit that we were lucky that we have this screen so that we could have the spectators very close to the pitch. And we had this view of the players playing in front of this big screen at the first game. And after the first game, then people could see what it was all about. And then it really blew up, especially internationally, where the interest from media all over the world was massive. I haven't experienced anything like that before I came here to AGF, and during my time here in AGF, it was massive interest from around the world. But we had this good idea, and it was the narrative who was working with the Corona, and everybody around the world they had this common thing called COVID-19 or Corona, and they had the same problem. And there was football all over the world. They had the same problem. How do we get spectators? In Denmark, they have a solution. Let's talk to the guys in Denmark. So I spent 2 weeks talking to CNN, The Times, The Guardian, BBC, Sky Sports, and a lot of smaller media. I talked to TVs from Brazil, India, Germany, all over the world. And so it was massive interest in some weeks. So it was a success. But the thing I was most happy about it was that it was a success for the players. The players, they felt this enthusiasm. They felt this camaraderie from the stands. They felt that they were part of community because they could see and hear the fans. So I think it helped the players in the first couple of games after the Corona crisis. So yeah, it was a lot of work, a lot of technology, but it was also a big success in many ways, not only from a PR standpoint, but in also in a commercial part and for the players. So that was a good experience.
Yeah, and I know from our national news as well that it was a big show for national, like not national, international, as you were saying. You were talking with several different newspapers and magazines from around the world. And I just, you know, can still see those pictures that I've had from seeing from the news and so on, where, you know, you did an equalizer in the end of the game.
Yeah.
So the other team was in the lead. You scored a 1-1 goal. And then you can just watch all the fans from the screens, their joy. They're sitting in their, you know, in the living room or somewhere where they actually have a camera showing themselves, which was
And that, the thing that surprised me was how the emotion, it was very emotional. I almost got moved when I saw these pictures of people in their homes, because we're used to seeing people at the stands. So it's almost like a blur when you have a lot of people. Here we get, we got the privilege to get to people's homes, the living rooms, and seeing a family watching the game, friends. You have an elderly couple watching the game. And I also talked to some of the players afterwards. They had the same feeling. This is quite moving. And seeing how happy they were when I equalized at the end. And you see that one-on-one. Because, of course, it's also a fantastic experience when you have a full stadium and you equalize in the last minute. And it's this explosion of feelings. But it's just a massive spectators. You don't see the single spectator. You don't see the couple. Here you saw the single couple. You saw the spectators back home. You saw the happy wife kissing her husband. So that was quite fun and moving to see that. And I think that the thing that we took from that experience was that the technology can do a lot of things, but it is the human emotion of it. It's the human side that matters. And what we shown was that a football club is a community. It is a family, and we are missing each other when it's the corona. That was the most important lesson that we took out of all this. And that was also what I told the media, and we talked to a lot of clubs from all over the world. We talked to NFL, we talked to Major League Soccer. And I kept coming back to this. This is an emotional project, guys. This is not about the technology. I don't care how big screens you have at your big stadiums in the NFL. This is about your fans and your community and how much they miss you. And you give them the opportunity to be together around the games. And you also make sure that your players feel the love and see the love from the stands and from the fans. And when they do that, they tend to play better.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I really enjoyed watching those pictures and short clips that you could see.
You asked me before of how is an ordinary day in my work life, and those weeks it was massive. Maybe 5 or 10 times a day I have media. Maybe five in an ordinary day I have media calling me 5 times or so. But that was, my phone kept ringing all the time. I went over to the stadium and talked to Sky via my phone, and I tried to show Sky Sports how it looked. When that was done, I need to talk to German radio and so on. So sometimes people say, oh, my phone kept ringing off the hook, but it literally rang all the time from morning till night. So that was also fun to try to have so much pressure for a long period of time, because that also give you experience when you're going forward. How do I react under pressure? How do we take this interest and make it bigger? Because that's also an advice I gave to people after that when you feel a wave, it is just not a matter of riding the wave. It's also try to get this wave to be bigger. So how do you push it, the wave, forward? So we got a lot of good experience there, and we were very happy and proud that we also have a good coverage of the city. Afterwards I did some measuring, and I have people crunching the numbers. And in Aarhus, the municipality of Aarhus, they were the European capital of 2017 for a whole year. We created more publicity around Aarhus in the month of this project than that project in 2017 did a whole year. So that was also a good experience that we were able to get Aarhus on the map also.
Well, it feels like, you know, this year has been certainly a very different year for everyone, but especially for the club AGF when it comes to the, you know, the competition and the championship. Also, you know, the long history of the club, how long it was until, you know, had this sort of race in the season in general, but also the whole virtual stance and, you know, explosion of media and interest from the whole world, which must be, obviously, as you were saying, a lot of work, special time, but something that hopefully you can look back at when it comes to 2020, strange year on the other hand, also a very special one when it comes to...
It's a bittersweet year this year because we have this success with the teams, the men's team. We have been playing some very good football. We are starting this season also on a good note, and we can't have the spectators. So, but on the other hand, we have a lot of success with a lot of our project. We have sporting success with the team also. So it's been a bittersweet year, I must say. We have, as you were mentioned, and I also mentioned, we have starting a new women's team, which has also been a very good experience on the human side and also on the commercial side. But there's no spectators that we can get to the game. So if I should put one word on this year, it's bittersweet.
There we go. Well, Søren, I think we could probably talk for much more, but I also have to respect your time. And I also want to thank you a lot for taking the time, sharing your experiences. And, you know, there's tons of stuff behind the scenes when it comes to communication, for sure. And especially 2020 with AGF. So thank you for sharing the time. And I wish you a great day and a future success for yourself, but also for the club. And this is it. You know, I want to thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Sportviews podcast. And I hopefully you enjoyed the episode as much as I did as well. And, you know, plenty of stuff to learn from this conversation. And I think, you know, just listen back to it again and again, because there are tons of lessons learned in this episode. And I was also want to say to everyone to please subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to it. And if you also enjoyed the episode, please give us a review. It helps us to reach out to more people with the same passion as you do have. And if you want to learn a little bit more about CERN and AGF, we will put that in the show notes in the podcast description. And you will find us on the Instagram account Sportviews Podcast, where you can probably see a few of the things that we have talked about in this episode. So once again, thank you, sir, and thank you for thank you, listeners, for taking time and share any feedback you would like on the Instagram account or sportviewspodcast@gmail.com. And that's it. So thank you once again, Søren, and have a nice day.
You too.
Thank you.